You're listening to Whitebird Mutual Aid. I'm Hannah Francis. In this show, we speak with local organizations that work directly with their community to get basic needs met. This episode, I speak with Ola Torreira Adeniji, who works for Lane County Public Health and the relatively new Community Partnerships Program. This is the first of two episodes with Ola Torreira, and in this episode, we discuss what public health is and a little bit about the Community Partnerships Program.
Yeah, my name is Ola Torreira Adeniji. My pronouns are she, hers, and my job title is Outreach Coordinator for the Community Partnerships Program.
The Community Partnerships Program was started in October of 2021.
All right, so Community Partnerships actually came from this idea behind Public Health Modernization, which is a statewide initiative from Oregon Health Authority, and essentially is a funding stream, an intentional funding stream that is going to add more dollars and infrastructure to just zhuzhing up public health a little bit. There's some foundational capabilities that were, prioritized, established, and one of them happens to be community partners and community partnerships. And so it's nice to know that, our program, Community Partnerships, came from this idea of really trying to evolve the way that public health currently is, and to really having it be more community focused and community centered and led, so that it feels nice that we have statewide backing, that there's funding and the initiative is there and wants to be there for us to continue to do the work. So we really, as a program, just envision Lane County as a place where all people can achieve their fullest potential, because we've eliminated inequities that were created by, our history of colonialism, slavery, and genocide. And we just really hope to help co-create with our partners a community where everyone's basic needs are met and we can thrive.
The Community Partnerships team is small but growing.
Myself, my boss, Mo Young, and our epidemiologist, Jennifer Webster.
The position that Ola has there as outreach coordinator seems to be a great fit for the many fields that she has become an expert in.
I've been kind of forced gumping my way around the state from different public health emergency to emergency. I actually started out with the rental crisis in Portland. I helped write some guidance around no-cause evictions, and then I that was on Multnomah County, and then I bounced over to Oregon Health Authority to help out with some messaging on the extreme levels of cadmium and lead and arsenic that were being that were coming from the smokestacks of glass factories. And then I took a brief break and had a baby and came back down to Eugene, and I wanted to just be a contact tracer for COVID. And I was like, yeah, I've got applicable skills. I have undergraduate degrees in Black studies, community health education, and social sciences. And so when I was attaining those degrees, of people were like, what are you going to do with all those? And I was like, I don't know, maybe help out my community in the apocalypse. And then it happened kind of with COVID. So I've curated these degrees to actually be exactly where I am, helping my community in public health. And so when this position and kind of everything came to fruition, I really want to say it was like more of a call to the universe of being in the right place at the right time. I really truly feel I'm supposed to be on this timeline right now, helping out with this program. So it's super exciting, but just wanting to be able to help out my community. Originally I had grand ideas of being a doctor, and we grew up without insurance. We were underinsured most of the time, and just seeing the way my family was treated when we went to an emergency room to seek medical care that probably could be seen by, a PCP, but if you're underinsured or uninsured, don't have that. And just really thinking, like, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be, I mean, I don't want to be the savior at the end who's like chastising folks for not getting there fast enough. That doesn't feel good. You know, there has to be a more upstream approach to catch folks and have earlier interventions that doesn't mean, you know, ending up in the emergency room for high blood pressure. So that's when I really focused and switched my attention to public health and really wanted to work in that direction. So my heart's in EJ work. That's kind of where I started, I guess, as far as like rental, you know, increases and environmental health and, you know, air quality. But I think it's all super connected and, you know, yeah, I just kind of end up where I need to be and make the best of it. And I'm stoked for this program. It's exciting. It feels like I'm supposed to be here, like I said.
So let's define public health. I think a lot more falls under that category than many people, including myself, really think about on a daily basis.
Right. Public health is kind of everything. You know, we've really been, you know, as a, you know, Lane County Public Health, you've probably seen us out in the community really involved within the COVID response. If you could remember back to a couple of years ago when the big white tents, you know, at the fairgrounds and, you know, we had drive-through clinics and, you know, we were really there kind of trying to get as many COVID vaccines as we could out as soon as we got, you know, the green light and the federal funding and the COVID. So you're probably familiar with us in that aspect, but public health itself, there's a lot of programs and departments that we serve. We have a program called Family Child Health, which deals with, you know, birthing parents, folks that are chest feeding, early educational programs for parents. Then we also have, you know, a preparedness program to help folks with like wildfire disasters, smoke. Let's see what else. We also have a communicable disease clinic, which you saw a little bit of the response with COVID, but we also deal with like STI outbreaks. We also have, you know, a full clinic to help kids that, get into schools as far as vaccinations go. What else is public health? Public health is gun violence. Public health is, you know, the infant formula shortage that happened. Public health is clean water. Public health is clean air. Public health is seatbelts. Public health is everything. And so really just having the opportunity to be in a position where we can really continue to advocate that message that public health, we aren't just there for natural disasters or unnatural disasters. We're there, you know, and available to community partners 365 days of the year.
The Community Partnerships Program was formed for several reasons, but one of the most pressing areas in need of modernization is this area of social inequities. Many Black, Indigenous, Latinx, and communities of color have experienced disproportionate effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. A government study by the National Center of Biotechnology Information called The Disproportionate Impacts of COVID-19 on Racial and Ethnic Minority Groups in the United States says Black, Latinx, and American Indian persons have been hospitalized and died at a higher rate than white persons consistently from the start of the pandemic. This has been traced to many different origins, but is in part due to lack of access to healthcare and hospitals in communities of color, distrust of the healthcare system, which is rooted in historic racism in the medical-industrial complex, and exposure due to the large number of essential workers who are BIPOC, many of whom were not afforded PTO. On the Lane County website, the Community Partnerships Program mission is written: the Community Partnerships Program envisions Lane County as a place where we have eliminated inequities that were created by our histories of colonialism, slavery, and genocide. And we have co-created with our partners a community where everyone can achieve their fullest potential. Your program is kind of trying to make it community-focused and community-led, like you said. And I think, to me, that means a lot of like making sure access is equitable and that everyone's kind of getting what they need. Last time we sort of talked about how like systemic racism is a huge public health issue. And I just wonder if you could speak a little bit more to that about like how the history of systemic racism has really been like highlighted and intensified during the pandemic and steps that y'all are taking to address that.
Yeah, our commissioners declared public health, or sorry, racism as a public health crisis last year. Our department has been working close with our communications department within public health to really highlight the initiative and highlight the work that we're doing past just making a declaration, right? Trying to make it more of just a more than just a virtue signal. So we're working close with our communications department to actually develop website about specifically about anti-racism and, you know, highlighting some of the historical past missteps, obviously, that the county's made. And it's nice to work within a framework. One of our values is that, you know, we are committed to the work of anti-racism within our department. And so it's nice to have folks on board. So we don't shy away from like the historical truths and the systemic oppression that, you know, folks have been forced to deal with over and over again. And like you said, a lot of those inequities have been highlighted within communities of color. And, you know, when things get bad, they get bad exponentially for groups of folks that have already, you know, have it bad. They have it worse. So we really noticed that through the COVID response, we were seeing not a great uptake of vaccine in communities of color, specifically our Latinx community and our Black and African American communities. And so we really stopped and, you know, did some information sharing. We did some community gathering to really figure out like what's keeping folks, the barriers that are real, the barriers that are imagined, you know, what's keeping folks from being able to access vaccines. And a lot of it was kind of like the three T's of trust, technology, and time. You know, we have early in public health, you always have the early adopters. We have the folks that are ready, willing, and able to just, you know, get in line and are fighting, clamoring over vaccine. And then we have the folks that are just aren't going to do it, that aren't going to adopt public health, you know, guidelines, and we know who those folks are. And then we also have the folks, and our work is really focused on the folks who are on the fence that just really need, you know, maybe a conversation. They just need, you know, some more time to think about it, maybe some more information. Maybe there's like physical barriers to getting to the site. So we really worked with our community partners like Central Latino and NAACP and the ARC to really figure out like, how can we make these environments more welcoming in a place that doesn't feel threatening? I use this example all the time. When we first started our COVID response, we were at the Lane County Fairgrounds. We had big white tents. National Guard was part of the response just in helping. And, you know, we have a big building behind us that says ICE. And so just having conversations with folks of being like, what's, you know, what are the barriers? And it's like, well, just look at the location. It's centralized. You're in, you know, downtown Eugene. So a lot of folks can't, you know, from Florence to Oak Ridge, like Lane County is the size of Connecticut. So there was transportation issues. There was just the facade itself. Like that's kind of a scary environment. If you're an earlier doctor, yeah, okay, that's fine. This is what we have to do. But if you're slightly hesitant and are scared and don't know what's going to happen, don't understand the process, it doesn't feel like a trauma-informed place to go. There could be other, you know, there could be language barriers. We really took a step back to try and, you know, create a mobile team and to create a group of folks that we knew were trauma-informed and culturally humble, and we could have smaller, more intimate, you know, gatherings, vaccine events. We hosted town hall meetings in a way to just share more information. We took time, we slowed down, and we really started to get a better response of folks uptaking vaccines, especially in our Latinx communities and our African American communities, because we did it in a way that just made sense community. You know, it doesn't make sense to everyone to just line up in a vehicle and get something done. Sometimes you need to, you know, have the guidance of like your elders okaying it. So we had a whole process with the Black community where we had an elders campaign because like as African-American, I'm a Black woman, like we really look to our elders for guidance. And so having a campaign and having folks get together that we knew trusted in the community to say like, hey, this is something that's like, okay, it's a safe space to ask all the questions. I had all the questions, like, look at me, I'm still alive. So really taking the time to just slow down and work with the communities that we know get overlooked again and again and again, because we don't feel, just because, you know, sometimes public health rollouts are trying to get a large amount of people and get community health levels, doesn't mean that the same impact isn't going to be great when we can get one family of 10, you know, that's vaccine hesitant. The amount of ripple effect that what that does with those families that are hesitant in these situations is just absolutely more amazing. So we've been working, like I said, closely with our community partners to be able to establish just kind of like a partnership so that community-based organizations can create their own environments that feel right. And we just kind of roll up as like, for the COVID response, it's like support, offer our vaccines, offer our literacy and help and information. And, you know, we do it in a way that's fun and exciting and no pressure and not as scary. And it's really just really changed our partnerships with CBOs and just being able to take a backseat of like letting community lead.
Yeah, I can totally see that focus on sort of humanizing communities instead of just seeing them as numbers and stats.
Yeah, that doesn't feel good at all. it's really just about providing the space and like creating the space and letting, you know, the resilience shine through. Like, I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that, you know, the resilience isn't remarkable to see after folks have like been forced to survive, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think it really is time to just take a back seat as far as like authorities go and be like, you know, what is good for your community? What is helpful for your community, from us? Because if you're just spouting out the same message over and over again, there's certain people that just aren't going to take the message because it doesn't resonate with them, and rightfully so.
Right. And like, you know, you can know that something's going to be good for a community on a technical level, but like if people don't want that for themselves, it's not going to happen, and it's actually going to feel harmful.
Right. Yeah. We really try and make sure that we're not creating any more harm, and trying to make sure that we add like non-transactional relationships too. Like if there's a community meeting that you want someone from community partnerships to be at, just to hear the good that's going on or the bad or whatever, we want to be in these spaces and we want to know, how we can help support the already amazing work that has been accomplished through, you know, being left behind over and over again. So.
Another area that the Public Health Division is focusing on is the climate crisis and other forms of environmental pollution. An environmental justice position would hopefully be addressing issues of environmental racism within the county, because environmental harm and institutional racism are inextricably linked. This is something that can be seen all over the world. Environmental racism is the term that signifies the disproportionate impacts of environmental hazards on communities of color. This is the consistent practice of companies dumping toxic waste in or near communities of color. This is polluting facilities like power plants and factories being consistently located near communities or neighborhoods of color. This is BIPOC communities under-prioritized by government policy. Countless studies have found that race is often a more reliable indicator of proximity to pollution than income alone.
Yeah, so actually the great thing with the public health modernization is it's pumping more dollars into our environmental justice team. So we've just hired an environmental justice supervisor, and there's going to be 3 positions that are hired underneath that. So I'm excited for our EJ team because that just really speaks to a lot of the root cause issues of why BIPOC folks are experiencing the problems that we're experiencing. So I'm excited for them to get in here and to add to and hopefully build off of our anti-racism work. It's new. The preparedness program and department that we have right now is more internal facing. So I'm excited to have some external facing work to work with, community partners like Beyond Toxics and NAACP, folks that are already doing those really great work. That really great work within the community to be able to build off of that. So more to come on that.
Awesome. Another thing which I thought was kind of interesting is student debt. So how does student debt manifest as a public health issue?
So student debt manifests as a public health issue, interestingly enough. I myself, like I've already mentioned, I'm a Black woman, and we are the most educated group of folks in America, assuming, as far as like degrees, higher education attainment goes. And so we're really bearing, a disproportionate amount of debt in order to achieve those types of degrees and accolades, and yet still we're paid less, which is mind-boggling. But the way that student debt so right now the Biden campaign, has decided that they want to reverse $10,000 to $20,000 for the student debt. Well, it turns out that white Americans don't have as much debt as other groups of Americans do, Black Americans, Latinx Americans. So to just take off $10,000 to $20,000 debt might, take away all of the debt for a white American, and it might only be a drop in the bucket for Latinx folks or BIPOC folks. And we know this because traditionally, whiter folks make more money, they have more family wealth. And so they're taking out less loans, student loans, than their, BIPOC counterparts. So the way that it manifests is that after we've taken out more loans, then we try to get jobs, and the jobs are lower paying. We're stricken with more student debt, and we're just unable to have the same quality of life. We've got higher loan payments, there's a lot of discrimination in housing. There's a lot of different ways that it manifests and does not add to the value of life that we're told over and over again that college, does tend to do that. Oh, if you go to college, you get a 4-year degree, you'll go ahead and, make all of this money and life is going to be great. When Black folks and BIPOC folks aren't hired at the same rate, when we're not paid the same amounts, when we have more student debt, it becomes a systemic issue, and it becomes a racially systemic issue because we're just not getting the same. It might be equal. We might be getting the same amount reduced, but it's not proportionate, so it's not equitable. We did a piece on this recently in our CBO newsletter about, how specifically for Black women student debt is crippling and how it's hard to make it out of a system that's, obviously driven to disproportionately affect certain groups. And, it just continues to drive the narrative when we don't give folks the same opportunities and access. And then it just creates generational implications, and just being able to not amass the same amount of wealth as your white counterparts is it's problematic.
Yeah, no kidding. Jeez. Thanks for breaking that down. It's like really amazing to see that like so clearly and concisely called out. So thank you.
Yeah. No, no problem.
What are some public health issues that you notice in your community? Email me at whitebirdmutualaid@gmail.com to share your thoughts. Tremendous thanks to Ola Terrera Adeniji from Lane County Public Health and the important work that she is doing for the community. If you would like to know more about this program, you can visit the Lane County Public Health website at the links in the show description. Or you can also listen to the next episode to learn more about what the Community Partnerships Program does for our community. If you have any questions or comments, you can please reach out to me at whitebirdmutualaid@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to White Bird Mutual Aid. I'm Hannah Francis.